Welcome to Advantage Over, the podcast for the rugby referee community, or simply those in rugby who want to know more about refereeing. Your host today is Keith Lewis. Are you ready? Time on. Hi there, it's Keith here at the Advantage Over podcast. Thanks very much for joining us once again. It's been great to get a couple of episodes out for you in the last few weeks, so I hope you've enjoyed those two episodes. Really good conversation with Johnny last time, so really appreciate his time, and the feedback we've had on that has been excellent as well. So I'm glad that's the sort of thing that you are tuning in for. I wanted to pop back on this time and just record a quick intro to the interview I've done with one of the Women's Rugby World Cup match officials that I spoke to a couple of weeks ago, Natasha Ganley. It was a really, really great chat, really insightful listen, really insightful to hear her experiences of her refereeing career and how she got through the last couple of years, and of course the high pressure environment that was a Rugby World Cup. But in listening to it back, I realised I made a mistake. I've underplayed her test matches in there. I said eight, she'd done eight tests so far, and that's wrong. It was 13, and that was as of the 8th of September. So as I was reading my notes, I just got the wrong number in the wrong order. So she's done more tests than I say in my intro that we recorded live, so just apologies for that. We fixed it here, and hopefully you'll enjoy the next half an hour's chat with Tash. I'll leave you now to me and her. So, joining me today on the Advantage Over podcast is Tash Ganley, who you will all know for having watched the Women's Rugby World Cup. It's great to have someone like Tash on the pod just to share her experiences, how she got to where we're going, and some stuff about what she might be doing in the future. So, Tash, welcome to us.
Thanks for having me. Very cool.
Not a bad intro. Bad setup so far. Looking at some numbers I've got in front of you. So, refereeing debut, Super Opiki and Super W, three Farah Palmer Cup finals in New Zealand. Eight test matches so far, including two at a World Cup, six nations at debut this year, and that's all in the last couple of years. So tell me the story. How on earth did we get to this conversation?
It is wild. I didn't actually expect to be even in this position talking about it, so I feel pretty lucky, to be honest. I started refereeing back when I was in school, and we didn't have a women's program or anything like that growing up in the north, and so naturally I kind of fell into refereeing. My dad and my brothers were fully involved playing, my dad was coaching, so it was kind of just a natural progression into staying involved in the game. I got some pretty lucky experiences through my early 20s, debuting, I think, when I was 21, which is a long time ago now. I refereed for about 5 or 6 years, and then I took a break just to focus on a bit of study, and work was getting pretty serious at that time. So for all intents and purposes, I thought that I had finished the rugby dream when I was around, 27, 28, and a couple of years ago, I was still just doing a little bit of club stuff, just to stay involved. I still loved it. Obviously the rugby community you grow up in, so to give back is just natural. And I got a call from New Zealand Rugby, who needed me to help out with a couple of Farah Palmer Cup games, which is our domestic competition, and so I ended up doing I was asked to just do one, but I ended up doing, I think, eight in the final, and that was the beginning of the last couple of year journey, which obviously you've just read
Welcome
out
back.
My credentials and rolled into Opiki and reffing that final, and debuting in Super W over in Australia, and then Six Nations and World Cup, which is, it's pretty unreal to just think about what's happened over the last 2-3 years.
I do want to get into a bit of World Cup stuff, but can I just take you back on something you just said? You said it twice there, and it's natural progression. You said you naturally went into refereeing, and that, for lots of people listening, might agree with that, because it might come from a playing background or gone into refereeing by getting injury and wanted to do something. But you kind of were, you were playing, and then your dad was coaching. Why did the refereeing route go? Why not coaching, or why not something else?
Well, I was still fairly young, and in that point, I didn't feel like I had the skill set or even the desire to kind of to go down that coaching route. Like, there wasn't any of those pathways like there is now. And so I say natural progression because my family will laugh, but like, I think I'm quite naturally bossy anyway. So I think refereeing and rugby and the rules kind of went hand in hand. So that's why I say natural progression. But there were no other options for me, I guess. You either played netball or you played hockey when you're in school. In terms of a woman's rugby team, there wasn't anything available. So it was, I think, just the only option.
Do you think that's changing now? Is the growth of the women's game changing that for the next task? You think there is that those options are available to certainly stick playing?
100%. And I'm currently the women's high performance manager at Northland Rugby. And, you know, as part of that, we've got the women's academy and the high performance. So, you know, I went to a future Cody training session last night, which is girls from 17 to sort of 23, 24. And just seeing the depth and support and resourcing that even Northland Rugby now are putting into these younger players coming through. So they make sure that, you know, they have got those opportunities, and if they're not wanting to play, like, you know, do they want to referee? Do they want to, you know, go down the management route? Like, there's just so many more options available, and, you know, I wish I was coming through the ranks now, because I think just the variety of things is exciting for younger women.
I guess that keeps the pressure on trying to find more people to go down the refereeing route. Now that there are more options, we don't lose more potential referees in the future because there's no other choice but to referee. So I guess it's a wider recruitment problem.
Exactly. And I was talking to a couple of ex-players last night as well, and I sort of said, oh, would you consider coming across to refereeing? And they giggle and they laugh, and I'm like, no, like, it's a serious comment, because they've still got so much more to give. And, you know, if they don't go down the coaching route, then, you know, they have got a lot of time. And refereeing's awesome in the fact that you can do other hobbies, and, you know, you don't have to turn up to team trainings, or, you know, there's not that obligation of being somewhere at the same time other than the game. So it is a little bit more flexible.
Do you think, I mean, New Zealand rugby's got quite a historical scheme, haven't they, about attracting scholarships across from the playing community into refereeing? We've seen, I guess, at the elite level, around your colleagues at the World Cup, Amy Barrett-Taron would have played international rugby, Holly and Coxey got there or thereabouts, and to switch sides, we've definitely seen that as a push from the men's side. Do you think that's attracting the players across, having those subtle conversations you were just talking about last night? You think that there's more of that to come?
I think so, yeah. I think there's definitely more of that in the pipeline. And I think the scholarships is such a fantastic way to incentivize them to come across, because it does sort of supplement, either a playing career or if they're studying on the side, and just to give them a sort of a little bit of a taster. And, you know, we've had some success coming out of that. You know, obviously we've got Chloe Sampson, who's come off the back of one of those scholarships and is now refereeing on the World 7 series. Mm-hmm. So I think she's back in Dubai this weekend, which is awesome. And, you know, we had Kristen Cottrell from the Blues come across, and we've got some awesome ladies this year as well. So I think, yeah, Maggie's doing an awesome job of promoting that, and I hope to see more of it in the future, because, yeah, I just think that they've got such an advantage coming from a high performance scheme to come across and use that knowledge as a player to obviously put into refereeing. I just think it's a fantastic opportunity for them.
Yeah, that's great. And just the listener, the Maggie that Tash just references, Maggie Cogger-Orr, fellow Rugby World Cup referee, and who's the women's referee development manager, I think is the job title
for New Zealand.
Zealand, so doing some great stuff down there. So let's flip to my end of the world, where you came up this way for the World Cup last year. Tell us how all that came about, because obviously you had a bit of a rocky journey to get there with a little on-field slip-up. So let's talk about the last 18 months and how we got to England last year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how far back you want me to go, but obviously debuted in Six Nations last year, which was incredible. And then this year, everything was kind of on track to have the same sort of pathway with obviously aspirations to referee at the World Cup. And our Opiki season starts in February, and so I was doing a pre-season game in Wellington, and I won't blame my positioning. I'll blame the bad inside cut ball. But essentially, the Matatu team, which is from our Canterbury region, threw Grace Brooker a inside pass, and we collided, and I hit the deck and ended up breaking my arm middle of the game. So that was a bit of a rocky start to the year.
Yeah, so that's one way. You didn't finish the game, did you? You did come off.
I did.
You did finish the game.
So I sort of got to a point, maybe sort of 5 or 2, because I just thought I just, you know,
we
call it a Charlie horse down here, but just sort of damaged the muscle pretty bad. It kind of goes dead. And I was like, oh, you know, I thought I'd shake it off. And 5 or 10 minutes later, I couldn't lift my arm above chest level. And so I had to try. I got one of the physios to have a look at my arm, and I said, oh, you know, have I done something? And he sort of went, oh, yeah, you're in trouble here, mate. And I said, you just give me something to finish the game. And I think he gave me a morphine to finish the last 20 minutes of the game, which I think the best I've ever refereed, to be honest. But yeah, got through the game, and after the game, I couldn't take my shirt off. I couldn't tie my shoes or anything like that. And so ended up driving myself to the A&E, and yeah, obviously had a fracture, and it was an interesting time in Wellington. So obviously I'm not from there, so yeah, had some really good support, luckily.
But as a story of resilience, I guess, and recovery at that peak time, I mean, that must have taken a bit of a psychological hit, as well as obviously the physical recovery stuff. How did you literally get through that period, knowing full well, look, you knew you were on track for something good, and then you get an injury bang in the middle of that key prep point? How do you actually get through that?
Well, I think it was, I was very lucky. So one, there was a lot of tears, like, don't get me wrong. Like, I was devastated. But I also have a very good friend, Garrett Williamson, who used to coach me, and he also lives in Wellington, and he is an ex-international referee as well.
That's a name I'm familiar with, yeah.
You are, yes, you are. So he was around for a very long, very long time, and so he had come to watch me that day, and sort of said, you know, okay, no dramas, we'll see you next time, and I called him at the hospital and I said, I think you need to come and get me. And so, he picked me up in a blubbering mess, and we ended up going out for some food later on. And he's just the right person at the right time. So he's working with New Zealand. He's not a New Zealand netball. He was with New Zealand netball. Now he's moved across to basketball. Mm-hmm. But he's from a high performance mindset, and I consider him one of, like, my most wisest mentors. And he kind of talked, like, we talked through what success looked like for me, and was success making the World Cup, and if that wasn't going to happen, does that still mean that I'm successful? So it was just the right conversations to kind of put into my mind frame, like, into my mind, that if I didn't get selected for World Cup, that, you know, am I still going to be happy with what I've achieved so far and in my career, you know, considering that World Cup's another 4 years away, and, you know, the next World Cup, sorry. So it was just the right conversation at the right time. So that helped me initially. And then from there, moving forward, just having the right strength and conditioning program around, you know, my rehab. You know, we've got Tom Gretton, who works for World Rugby, as our psychological support. And he was fantastic as well. So, yeah, I think that was the tail end kind of main bulk. But, yeah, I think having that initial conversation just took the initial shock out of it, I think, helped.
And I think when we first met, you were wandering around the Lensbury with a rugby ball under your arm to keep the arm in place as well. That sort of physical recovery as well.
I totally forgot about that. So I mean, for visuals, I still had a cast, yeah, and a sling on, and so I couldn't sprint with the sling because the movement hurt the arm too much. And so Fran, bless her, the World Rugby Strength and Conditioning lady, she got me to hold a ball under my arm, which kept the arm in place while I was doing my MAS block. So I hope no one's got photos of that day, because it absolutely looks ridiculous. But obviously it's part of the recovery. And I mean, I was lucky to even be there and be considered for that last round, which was nice. So missed a trip to Italy, but you know, I'm stoked that we got to Scotland and were able to perform there.
So take us to the day of the phone call. So we've seen some clips of before in the past of selection period and what it's like to be in your seat when you know the selection coming. You know you're in the mix. You know you've somewhere close. You know there's definitely a World Cup coming. The seats on a plane to England to come. How did that day work out for you? What's that phone call like?
Well, because of the time difference, it wasn't until very, very late that night. And they said, okay, on the 19th or 20th or whatever the date was, we're going to be getting into contact with you. And I just assumed, okay, they're going to book in like a little Zoom call and, you know, I'll know when I'm getting called and stuff. But it turned out just to be a straight cold call from Alhambra. And I remember the phone ringing and I was shaking so hard. So I had to take it into another room because my parents had like, you know, turned the TV off and they were sitting there waiting in the lounge for me. So I took the call and I think it lasted about 2 minutes and they just said, you know, we'd like to select you as a referee for the World Cup. Just soak in the news and we'll be in contact with you over the next sort of couple of weeks with logistics. And, you know, I cried and a lot of tears and obviously very grateful and went back out into the lounge where Mum and Dad were kind of waiting and I was crying so much. Mum had kind of prepared the, oh, I'm sorry, you'll get it next time kind of speech. And I was like, no, it's good news. And yeah, there was a lot of jumping and tears and joy. And my dad had just gone through a very serious back operation. So we had to kind of help him up to get over to him. So it was a really nice moment. And I don't think I slept at all that night because I was just, you know, it was so late at night that we got the phone call and there's so much adrenaline and happiness that, you know, you're kind of just lying in bed being like, this is going to be amazing. So yeah, that was kind of the night, which is nice.
So we head back to earlier this year reverse from now back to earlier this year when you all kind of get into London. How long a trip, obviously you're from New Zealand, so that being away from home for that long, how long were you away from home in that particular trip? And what, talk us through what it's like being in a World Cup environment from an officiating perspective.
So I think we were away from home for about 7 or 8 weeks, so 2 months. And then I tacked on a little bit of extra time just to decompress and spend some time with friends and family somewhere blue mm-hmm. with a lot of sunshine. And so, yeah, it was about... I think
not that London in September is too grey, but that's pretty accurate.
It was not in London. So it was, yeah, I think close to 3 months that I was away in total. And it was tricky because obviously, you know, I'm living at home at the moment, and so you do get those comforts of having your support around you and, you know, having a bit of help in terms of you know, like dinners sort of prepared if you've got a long day and that kind of thing. And also just like, you know, the sort of debriefs at the end of the night, you know, over a cup of tea, I think is always nice. And so to not have that is always a bit of an adjustment period. But, you know, I've done this for so long now that I'm comfortable with being away and I've made some really good friends. So connecting with them and my mum and my brother ended up coming over and watching both of my games in the middle and staying for an extra week. So I did have them there as well to experience that with me, which was wonderful. So it was an awesome environment, and because we know each other so well, the group, it was really I think it was just an easy transition period. Like everyone's always doing something and you're invited to go and do that, and if you want your own space, I think it's great too. There's a bit of structure around, you know, our meetings, our fitness sessions, our reviews, and then obviously our game travel on the weekend. So it's a nice structure, but enough time to yourself if you want it.
And for those of you who don't know, how did they put you up? Were you all in a hotel somewhere and you sat to kind of meet for meals and stuff downstairs, or was it in a bunkhouse somewhere or a Airbnb type place? What was the actual accommodation?
Yeah, so we stayed at a hotel, but they were serviced apartments. So all of us got our own individual apartments, and it had obviously, you know, the bedroom, and then it had a lounge where the fold out couch. So people that had families, you know, their families could come and stay as well, or their friends. So it was a really cool inclusive environment. Like a lot of the referees have younger family, and so to have those have them all included in our outings and stuff was awesome. And so we had breakfast together in the hotel, and that was just an open sort of time between I think 6 and 9. So you sort of just went along whenever that was ready, and then you organized your own lunch and dinners. So if you wanted to go to someone else's apartment and, you know, cook with them, or if you wanted to cook for someone else, or if you wanted to go out for meals, it was all up to you, which I thought was cool.
And that commitment must be a pretty intense 6-week, 7-week window with everyone in the stuff and doing all the games as well. How did you find that sort of experience of doing all that, all the prep, the fitness stuff you have to do, the logistics of moving around England for match days, bit of travel?
The travel was awesome, and I think that's why XV, like the XV competitions, have been so good, as it's kind of been a little mini World Cup. And so we all went into the World Cup knowing what was kind of expected of us and what the structure of the week would look like. And so I think in that regard, I think it's been really beneficial to sort of prepare for that. It was a little bit different because obviously we were based in Kensington and all of the games were out over London, and so you only really got 4 days as a big group together, and then you travelled with your team of four out to the different venues. And so I found that a little bit tricky because you know, you did only hang out with those people on the weekend, which is awesome, but you know, if you're looking for the group environment that you got at the New Zealand World Cup, for example, there wasn't quite that interaction level.
Yeah, because New Zealand was all on the same site, wasn't it? It was multi games in the same venue, so you didn't have that different experience.
No, you didn't, and everyone travelled up to Whangarei or, you know, in Auckland, and they're all based in the same area. So when you come back from the game on a Saturday night, everyone's together. Whereas, you know, some of our games were Sundays, so we weren't getting back to the hotel until Monday. So yeah, there's a little bit of a gap there with I know I refereed on a Sunday, and so I wouldn't travel to the Saturday, but my ARs for my game would leave on a Friday. So you're kind of sitting there on a Friday by yourself in the hotel going, waiting for someone to come and be your friend.
But as a World Cup entirety, how was it being part of that event?
Amazing. It was so well run in terms of logistics. Like, there was no detail that went sort of undone. It was, I think, the leadership that we had in our team with Ali and Joy were incredible. That they just gave us so much confidence to go out there and referee, you know, the way that we were good. You know, we weren't trying to change little details at the last minute, or, you know, we weren't reacting to feedback. You know, we were really strong, and we'd built such a good base over the last couple of years, and I think they did such a good job as management, setting those expectations and being clear about their being clear about what they are wanting of us. That I just think that we went in there with such synergy, and you know, there's a few little debates here and there, but I think overall the group really like gelled together, and it was just a really nice environment.
And you were able to step out and watch the Black Ferns play as well, and be part of, a rugby spectator in an awesome rugby event. That must have been pretty special.
It was awesome. Yeah, it was kind of a last minute thing as well, because there was only two of us that weren't involved that weekend, and so Coxie being one of them, and so her and I both missioned last minute with our physio soldier on the Friday night down to Bristol from Kensington, which is, you know, a couple of hours drive, and watched the Black Ferns Canada semi-final, which breaks my heart, but it was a fantastic fantastic game. And then drove back to Kensington that night. So the event itself was a bit of an adventure, and it was nice to sit there as a punter and watch the spectacle. I just think that women's rugby itself is just come so far, and it's so entertaining to watch, and just the character and the flair, and you know, just the speed, and it just makes me so proud to be involved and being a part of that change.
And you obviously played your part in there by making your World Cup debut. So how was that weekend? York?
So York was the debut, and then the second game was no, it was Exeter first, and then York second.
I couldn't remember which round it was.
Yeah, and I remember that because I forgot my accreditation. I was so nervous and so excited for the game that I totally left my accreditation 2.5 hours away, and so I had to go to the little tent outside the Exeter field to get one of the ladies to reprint me an accreditation.
So once you got into your World Cup debut, it all went well.
It was awesome. It was fantastic, and I had France, Brazil. I'd never had either of those teams before, and so just seeing Brazil, you know, they just stayed in it the whole time, and they fought, and they ended up getting a try close to the end, and it was like they'd won the whole World Cup. Like, they were just so, and the crowd was behind them as well, and you know, I think France played amazing as well. So it was just an awesome game to be a part of, and yeah, I just had a fantastic team, and it was just, yeah, a really, really nice event. And obviously my mum and my brother were there, along with one of my very good friends, Suniti, and just to have them in the stands as well, and to come off the field and give them a big hug and just say, we did this, I thought was, I thought was pretty special.
It was certainly great to watch, obviously having seen you guys in operation a little bit closer to the listeners of this. It's certainly great to see people make that stage and make the most of it. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
So you did another game up in York, headed up to York for the next game, and then were involved in one of the quarterfinals.
Yep. So York was my second game in the middle, and then we were down in Exeter again. I'm pretty sure for the quarterfinal, with Amy and Maggie, and yeah, that was spicy. I was definitely excited for that game. That was always going to be tight between France and Ireland. So to be involved in that and feel the pressure and feel just the synergy of the group, I think was awesome. So yeah, it's pretty special to be involved in that.
So we're a couple of weeks. Months now after the World Cup finished, how do you kind of look back and reflect? Do you think I'm done now, or is this just the start of the task journey?
Well, I think there's a little bit of hunger there, because yeah, there's obviously some exciting things in the pipeline. It is weird to be sitting here back at home and feeling like the World Cup was so long ago and just a distant memory. It's kind of like, did it even happen? And to come back and you know, after tournaments, there's always that bit of a lull in communication and in terms of like from World Rugby, and you're kind of sitting there going, okay, no one's talking to me, and I don't have the interaction with the girls, and you know, I'm not popping around to their room.
And it's your
off season
as well.
It is our off season, and our season doesn't start till June, so we've got, you know, we've got 6-7 months of kind of, what do we do now? So it's a very weird feeling, to be honest. And you know, there's always that post-tournament depression, so you work through that and you focus on what's next and building through.
Almost a seamless link. Obviously, having been up here a couple of months ago, you must have started some conversations, and you're doing some work with Northland, as you've already told us about. What is next for you? What's going to happen next?
Am I allowed to say?
I think you are. I was going to say, the other version of this is when it was announced that Northland talked about your journey into stepping up and helping them and doing the development work that you've talked about already, there was an add-on to the end of that sentence that talked about heading north to referee in the PWR season, and so that seems like it's gonna be a great opportunity for you.
It will, and that little detail, you'd be surprised at how many people missed what that means, or what that means for me. So it's, yeah, very funny that you picked up on that. So yeah, the next exciting little step in my journey is to go back to the UK in Jan, and I'm going to go and referee, yeah, in the PWR and referee in the UK for 6 months, which is very exciting. So yeah, I had a couple of conversations, and obviously with us not having any rugby until June, there's a little bit of a gap, and you know, you obviously see a few of our Black Ferns players going over to play for the PWR team, so I'm kind of just following suit and trying a bit of a different side of the world, and very, very exciting secondment coming up.
So we're not recording this for video purposes, but I'm sitting here in the UK at -2 on a 7 o'clock on a morning, and Taj is sitting on her balcony overlooking the sunset in New Zealand. So we're going to bring her up north to experience the UK winter in January. Will be great. But look, as an opportunity to get to come and operate in one of the professional women's environments, must be something that you're really looking forward to, and how you can help that grow, but also from your own refereeing.
It's cool. It's such a nice opportunity, and Dean Richards and Paul Hull have been so accommodating with helping me get to this point. And yeah, they're just so inviting to come across and to do that. So I couldn't be more thankful for them for making this happen. And I'm so excited. It's one of the best competitions in the world, and the quality of players, the quality of rugby, everything about the experiences is going to be something I've not experienced before. I'm looking forward to every aspect of it.
Well, for those listening, there's plenty of folk in the UK who I'm sure will be looking out for you and popping along, and you'll hear some voices and some listeners, I'm sure, and they'll be looking out for you and watching your journey. So that's really exciting times. I think it's great that rugby can do that. I always talk about my own refereeing exchanges, the odd trip to South Africa here and there, to Sweden, to do the tens in Sweden, to Ireland, to do stuff. And those experiences that we get as referees going somewhere new to do what we love doing is just a win-win all round. And we've now got structures. It's great. I think it's great that we've got structures in place that can accommodate that on a longer scale and at the higher levels as well. So. Should be good.
It's awesome, and I'll be based out of Devon or Exeter for the first couple of months. So my very good referee friend Hollywood is accommodating me, so she is going to be my new flatmate for the next 3 months. So look out, referee world. I think that'll be awesome. Just having someone to train with and go to the games with, and I think that's going to be another element that I'm excited about, is just to spend some more time with these connections that I've made across the years. And obviously Holly and I debuted basically a week apart, and we're at XV together and Dubai together and World Cup. So yeah, to do it with her, I think is going to be awesome too.
I think that's a pretty good place to wrap this chat up with. Tasha, it's been great to have you on, to hear the story, to hear about how a World Cup works when you've got a whistle in your hand, and that environment. And thanks for sharing some of those kind of the tougher bits as well. That resilience element is something we don't often talk about enough. So really appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks so much, and look forward to catching up with everyone in person next year.
That was the Advantage Over podcast from rugbyreferee.net. Hope you've enjoyed what the content that we brought to you on this episode. So what next? Well, there's a few things I'd love you to do now. Firstly, tell me what you thought. Drop me an email at keith@rugbyreferee.net, and it'd be great to hear from you. Secondly, please tell your rugby or your referee pals about this podcast. Do that wherever you happen to hang out, whether it's on the internet or somewhere else. Share the links with your groups or your WhatsApp chats. That would be great. And if you leave a rating on the podcast site where you found this pod, that also helps other people to find us. Finally, come and join us in our rugby referee community we've got over on Facebook. We only let referees and match officials into that space, so you'll be with one of 5,000 or so other referees where you can chat with them, ask questions, seek counsel, get opinions on referee-related stuff. It's a fantastic community. Worked really hard to make that happen. So if you head to refsquad.com, that will bounce you into the right place. And if you've done all that and you appreciate what you've heard so far, you can buy me a coffee at rugbyreferee.net/coffee. Anything I get through that support network helps keeps all the things up and running. Rugbyreferee.net is all about helping you become a better referee, and I hope we've done a little bit of that today. So for now, that is Advantage Over.